We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go. What's up, guys? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 405. Today's show is brought to you by betonline.ag. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all things sports. We got just a little bit of a different format today. Andrew was away for the weekend, so we had to record early. We recorded actually Friday morning together. And, you know, I wanted to give just a little bit of a buffer for the weekend because I know Manfred was scheduled to talk, and we were hearing from some more people on this Houston Astros thing that's just not going away. I'm done fighting it. It's here to stay forever, probably. So, you know, we're going to talk about it as things come out. So the thing that gets me is that when we're looking for more comments, additional information, which will continue to come out, I guarantee it. The one consistent piece that we're seeing is the lack of accountability, it seems like. Whether it's from the owner of the Houston Astros down to the players of the Houston Astros basically giving us these half-ass apologies, saying that they're, you know, sorry and have remorse and all this nonsense, you know, while reading body language and just looking at the way that they're talking and everything, it's just so clear that they do not care about it. And now we're having Carlos Correa walking out and talking to media like he's this big bad dude, and the arrogance just keeps on coming, because at this point, Carlos Correa is walking out in front, talking with Rosenthal, and saying, "I'm a man. I'm here talking to you so that you understand what I'm, where I'm saying, what I'm trying to tell you. You can look at me in the eye and know that I'm telling you the truth." In what world does you standing out there after all of this came out make us have to believe anything you say? Anything. Just because you're talking about it now doesn't mean a goddamn thing. It baffles my mind how arrogant and just how blinding arrogance these guys are, and just it continues. It never ends. They are doubling down and doubling down and doubling down. And whether it's, you know, these excuses coming out of you know, the shirt not wanting to come off because of the wife getting mad, or now Correa's talking about a tattoo that was bad on the collarbone. I mean, what are we doing here, guys? Like, what are we doing? The fact that you're making shit up at this point to just lie more and extend these lies, because they will all, at some point down the line, be exposed as lies. I guarantee it. It's just, it's mind-numbing. And then on Sunday, of course, we get Rob Manfred to come out and call a press conference and is able to talk about these things and take questions from reporters and basically just defending what he's already done. I mean, that's essentially what happened. And trying to act like he's just going to cap this thing off by him coming out and being the almighty voice and talking about it. And all he did was just reaffirm that, one, the decision for the penalties that he implemented were not good. They were not strong enough. They were not just. They basically didn't do anything to prevent these guys from cheating. And for him to have the balls and stand up there and say, "Well, we gave the players immunity so that we could have the information of what's happening." Okay, that's one thing, which I disagree. And especially when you have a guy like Fiers coming out and already talking. But to say that because we gave them immunity, why would they be truthful in the recollection of talking about 2017, but then lie about 18 and 19. Why would they do that? We gave them immunity. They now can talk freely. Well, I don't know, Manfred. Maybe it's because it's their reputation. Maybe it's because they don't want to make this even worse for themselves in their own minds by admitting to additional cheating. Maybe because they are holding on to dear God that this buzzard thing doesn't actually really come out and get exposed for, you know, being an actual buzzer or something along those lines, whatever the extension of the cheating was. It baffles my mind. So Manfred's going on and basically doubling down, saying that, yeah, you know, why would these guys lie? I believe them. I believe that, you know, what we did was the right way to go. And they were consistent about everything they said in 2017 and then everything and how they basically denied what they were doing in 2018 and 2019. Okay. Like, they didn't get their story straight ahead of time. I'm sure that that never happened. I'm sure that the closed doors Astros policy didn't run extremely deep and have these guys become consistent with their messaging. I mean, I was talking to Andrew about this in the show in a few minutes, but the look between Crane and Alex Bregman just before he starts doing his little bullshit speech is unbelievable. Anyway, we talked about that. We talked about a whole bunch of stuff, everything basically leading up up to Friday. But yeah, I want to talk. And I also saw some talking from Cameron Maben basically saying that, you know, his honor code is to the clubhouse he's currently in. Did he, you know, contribute to what happened, you know, all the things that in Houston? Yeah, he did. But he also said that he told the Yankees. So it seems like, and I think we all kind of assumed this, but the Yankees knew, you know, a good deal of what was going on in previous years leading up to Maben being on the Yankees. So he definitely didn't go silent on that, which is good to hear. What else? Just utter ridiculousness. The Correa thing was just mind-numbing to me. And then Manfred coming out and doubling down. He talked about a bunch of other things too. But and then the news from him was basically saying that they believe that not this week, but the following week, that we will have a resolution. The investigation will be closed for the Red Sox. So we'll see what happens with that. And, you know, whatever the suspensions that are looming from that investigation, we should hear that from what they say by the end of next week. So, yay. We will, by the next time you hear from us, we will have had seen a baseball game on Saturday. First game is against the Blue Jays. That's exciting. We get to watch these guys actually play baseball. I am very excited for that. I'm ready to just move on to some actual baseball with this stuff at least lingering in the background, but we'll have some real things to talk about, which is fun because baseball is supposed to be fun and not this nonsense that we've had to deal with basically the entire offseason. Aside, thank God Cole signed with us. That's it, because, you know, if that didn't happen and this was our offseason, I would be a miserable human being right now. Little housekeeping. BP crew, we are setting up chapters all over the place. We have a bunch of very strong chapters from last year that are continuing and already have a lot of events on the books. So a couple things. If you are in a city that is not New York and you want to meet up with more Yankees fans, get together for some watch parties. We got some games happening on the road as well now too. Do us a favor. You can do two things. You could go to Facebook and search BP crew and then sign up for that group. Just join that group. And or you can also email Colleen and me at bpcrew@bronxpinstripes.com. So that's bpcrew@bronxpinstripes.com. If you shoot us an email, tell us where you are. Let us know, you know, what you're looking for as far as involvement. You want to go to some watch parties. You're interested in starting a chapter if we don't have one. Hit us up. Let us know. bpcrew@bronxpinstripes.com. We're basically going to take all that and put them into, you know, an email list so that we can get back in touch with you. We'll respond to you. And then if you're looking to be part of a chapter, we will kind of, you know, put you in touch with the right people. So looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun this year, just growing those chapters and having everybody, you know, get their own crew in their cities so that we can cheer on these boys as they chase that number 28. All right, guys, I appreciate you. And we will, next thing I'm going to throw it to Andrew, who gets very confused by not doing the beginning of the show and gets completely thrown off. So enjoy the rest of the show, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, the podcast is starting and Scott just dropped a bomb on me and told me I can't do my normal intro and I have to say something different, and I'm like a lost puppy and I don't know what to say, because for 404 episodes I had the same routine, and after on the 405th episode, Scott, you just tell me do something different literally 1 second before we're about to press record. That messes with a man.
God forbid you act a little flexible in this case. You've done this before. I don't know what you're complaining about anyway.
Doesn't take much for me to complain, man. How you doing? Spring training is underway. Happy times. Baseball's back. Sunshine, grass, green grass. Baseball's being thrown. Guys showing up out of their Maseratis and grainy pictures through fences and long distance videos of that. I think that's Garrett Cole over there throwing a baseball.
My favorite caption so far, besides some of the quotes that we've seen come out about the scumbag Astros, is the Brian Hoke tweeted a picture of Paxton because he's got this mustache. I don't know if you've seen it. No, and he's talking about how the mustache is in the best shape of his life.
Yeah, people not happy about that because he's not going to be on a mound for 3 to 4 months.
Who cares? He's going with the policy there. That is the way to skirt the facial hair issue is with a solid mustache. Mm-hmm. was on point. I thought it was it looked good on the guy. So, you know,
do you think mustaches? Because mustaches kind of come back recently because of like the hipsters, but you have to be a certain type of person to rock a mustache now.
I don't think you it's do. Either, I think you can do whatever you want. In 2020, you can pretty much do whatever you want.
I think if you see someone with a mustache, you're like, oh, that person's being ironic. But in the 80s, everybody had a mustache. Literally every man had a mustache in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it was the same mustache, just like thick, bushy upper lip mustache. Like I look at any picture of my dad or, you know, if there's anybody I see from the 80s that's above the age of like 20, they've got a mustache.
No, that's true. That was the look. And it was I'd say started in the mid to late 70s because you definitely
just
see
like
the
any
floral
decade, you get residual from the previous decade.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was like a transition into the 80s because you see, I'm thinking back of pictures that I think I see like lots of very like earth tone floral patterns, like a brownish hue on all of the pictures.
Yeah, that's early 80s and then
no, that's 70s. That's late 70s going into the 80s. What do you talk? You can't talk about this era. I mean, I can't even talk about this era because I was barely born.
I mean, even though you were born in that era, you still can't talk about it. You're not qualified. You didn't grow up in it.
Oh, I'm qualified, baby.
I was having a conversation last night with someone about, I think that people who were born in the, and maybe you qualify for this too, but I think if you were born in the mid 80s to the mid 90s, that was the best time to be born as far as technology goes, because we remember what it's like to grow up without a screen in front of our face 24 hours a day. But then we also now can use all of this technology because we became sort of adults with this technology. And I think that's sort of the sweet spot, because we were discussing, like, imagine being like 9 years old right now. All you've ever known is tablets and screens and multi surfaces to be able to stream stuff, and it's just like you don't have any concept of what it was like before this stuff.
No, but I don't think they care. that sounds alien to them. So it's almost like, how did you live? That would be like saying that the best era is when our parents or grandparents were alive and the car came out or the telephone came out. I mean, it's all relative.
Because I don't think you
relative.
Can make an argument that it was better to not have a car to get around.
You could. I mean, that's just more annoying people that you're in front of.
you
had your privacy.
People are like, are they ever going to talk about baseball?
It's
usually the out of left field is saved for the end of
the
show.
I'll bitch about some stuff later.
The reason that it was a little bit different of an intro today is because we are recording early. We record on Sunday at some point for a Monday release, but I'm away this weekend for the holiday weekend, so we're recording Friday morning right now. So there might be some news that happens over the weekend. We want to leave a little bit of a buffer so Scott can talk about that at the beginning of the show. And you have already heard that, so you're like, Andrew, I know, shut the hell up and get on with the topic. So let's just do that very thing. What did you think of Boone's opening press conference?
I liked it. I think I like Boone. I like Boone talking because he's got that media voice in him. He's got the ability to express himself in a way that is a little bit more real than some of the other managers, you know? So I feel like he's a lot more relatable, and he doesn't really skirt from any issues. Like if he can't talk about something, he'll just straight up, you know, he'll allude to the fact that he can't talk about it. He won't like skirt around it in some bullshit way that's supposed to trick us. You know what I mean?
I mean, he's been trained in the Yankees way of talking, where you say a lot of words without really saying everything.
I don't think he's nearly as down the line of a Yankees, you know, spokesman as a lot of the guys are. I think that he still
Brian
has a
Cashman
lot of
Cashman is the master.
Well,
Brian
yeah,
Cashman's the master of saying a lot of words without saying anything.
And he, I mean, Boone's got that ESPN thing in him. I think he'll always have that. I think he was trained in the media by going on ESPN and talking about, you know, buzz topic things for a long time. So his opinion...
Was that a pun?
No. Sorry, I forgot that every time I say buzz or like trash can or bang, I gotta think about the freaking Astros. It's annoying. But the...
Well, that was the first question that he was asked.
Yeah.
And the first topic of conversation for a lot of the guys arriving at spring training, not just the Astros, which we'll talk about that disaster of a press conference in a little bit, but you know, the Yankees are heavily linked to everything that's happened with the Astros because they were bounced by them twice in recent postseasons.
Right.
So that's the first question that these guys are getting asked.
Yeah.
And I don't blame these reporters for asking the questions.
Oh, they have to. They're going to keep these questions are going to continue.
So I think, yeah, but they're going to die down as far as the Yankees are concerned, unless new information comes out,
because at a certain point,
you have to just move on and be like, guys, it's the 2020 season now. I can't keep talking about 2017.
Well, the problem is that it leaks into the 18, 19, and 20 season. And the new information that's going to come out, because it's inevitable that it will also leak into further seasons. Therefore,
yep,
stretching this on way further than, because you must have, I'm hoping now that you've been back in the States long enough and like seen enough stuff where you don't actually believe that that was a good punishment. And you don't actually believe that those guys didn't know what they were talking about. Because when you dive deeper into these things and you see all the things that they're saying and you see the context of what happened, you understand that these guys are all full of shit.
So, yeah, I mean, they're absolutely full of shit. And no one, I think Jim Crane needs to be, someone needs to step in and be like, Jim Crane, you're not capable of owning a baseball team.
You can't do that.
If you're going to sit up there and say, I don't think I should be held accountable. Like, dude, you are the owner of the team. If you run any organization, you are accountable for everything that goes on in that organization, like it or not. So even if the bottom rung intern like did something shady and you have never even heard of that person's name or seen that person, guess what? You're responsible. So Jim Crane, you are the biggest jackass out of all of these jackasses. It's just a complete contest of jackassery.
Yeah, but that's the thing. When you talk about
what I said when I came back and I said about the punishments, that what I was really saying is that they were more than I thought, because my expectations were just on the floor.
Okay, so I was talking to you about that, I hit the nail on the head by saying that your expectations got lowered so far by Major League Baseball, that because these were out there and they were existing, because they were there and they were vomited out into the world and just in existence, that they exceeded your expectations.
Yeah. And that's
a sad state of affairs.
Yeah. Cause baseball just can't get out of its own way on a lot of these topics and a lot of these things that they've done recently. So basically it comes down to then, well, you have to punish players unless baseball is going to say, Jim Crane, you can no longer own the team, or Jim Crane, you need to fire every member that was employed in 2017 to 2019 that may have had a link to this.
Yeah.
Then that just comes down to the players. And I don't even know why they bothered bringing up Bregman and Altuve to say a couple words. I would have respected it more if they just got up there and been like, we won the World Series, so sorry, not sorry. At least you're being honest then, because basically that's what they said through all these fake apologies. And Bregman, you could just tell Bregman like rehearsed that thing in the mirror like 50 times.
He didn't rehearse it. He memorized the little speech.
Yeah, it reminded me of like when I was practicing for my bar mitzvah. Like I was trying to have like the right inflection
and your fingers were and touching
like,
the tips.
Okay, grasp,
exactly.
You touch my fingers at this moment and raise my voice up when I want to sound enthusiastic and lower my voice when I really want to sound sincere. Oh man, it was so phony.
If you look at the very beginning of that, it's actually, I don't know, I haven't seen anybody really key in on this, but there's a look, there's an immediate little glance between Bregman and I think it was from Marley Rivera's video, because she was kind of on the left side of Bregman. But there's a glance as soon as he walks up there from Bregman to Crane, and Crane almost gives like a okay, like a nod, like go ahead, yep, okay, yep. Like do it, yep, like yeah. say that damn thing that we told you to say.
They're purposely being obtuse, I think. That's the only explanation for that press conference.
No, I don't think it's that. I think that they're so freaking out of touch and they actually believe this goes back to the arrogance. They actually believe that they were doing the right thing and that it was good. It's not even, they're so out of touch in their brains and in their actions that I actually believe that they thought that was a good apology.
Well, that's the only explanation. Okay, try and put yourself in their shoes. The only way they're completely not remorseful is if they are convinced every other team in Major League Baseball was doing the exact same thing.
Nope. They are not remorseful because they won the World Series and it worked and they don't
That's different though. That's different because yes, they won the World Series and that's the ultimate goal. So they might say it's worth it and I would do it again, but they don't even think it's wrong. And the only thing I can come down to is they must be convinced it wasn't wrong because everyone else was doing it. Just for the same reason players didn't think they were doing anything wrong taking steroids.
Or they just don't think it was wrong because it was available. There's a lot of things you could get if you want to get into their minds about the arrogance. Because arrogance will take over your brain. And it can get in your way. It can be a very clear... And it's one of those things that could trickle across... if you're in a room with a lot of people every day, like you're going to start acting like those people. And if you have the guy at the very top who won't hold any accountability for anything, and then you have the guy underneath him who is no longer there, but claims that he had no idea about it, just claims that it was not to his knowledge, even though we've seen that a lot more was to his knowledge that's been proven already. And these guys are all just taking a back seat, every single one of them from the top, saying like, nope, not me, not me, not me. Of course, they're all going to do that because it's been the narrative for however long, since probably 2015 at the minute. When did that intern start?
So the code breaker thing started late in 2016.
So
and we got a DM from someone, I'm not going to name names because I don't want to blow up anyone's spot, but we got a DM to the podcast account who knows. So he said, this guy, Derek Vagoa, he said that.
That's the intern
that was named in the Wall Street Journal article. The person who DM'd us knows his fiance and apparently follows her on Instagram. And he said, we could never figure out how her fiance went from having a low level job with the Astros to popping champagne with them in less than a year. Because she posts pictures of him wearing goggles coming out of the dugout after the Astros clinched the 2017 division. So in September of 2017, this guy is popping champagne with the team and apparently flying private with the team.
MVN.
We could not figure out, my circle of friends, what the hell this guy did to move up the ranks so rapidly. And he's like, and now we know.
And now we know. Most valuable nerd in the organization.
And everyone, they keep saying 2017, like they're going to brainwash everyone into just thinking, oh, this is only limited to 2017. The commissioner's report only said 2017, so that's all we're ever going to say. All the players, except Carlos Correa, have not really denied. They have not said, no, we did not use buzzers in 2018 and 2019. They've said, well, the commissioner's report didn't find anything, so that's sort of their get-out-of-jail-free card, except Carlos Correa said...
He's tweeting about it.
And he also said it in the clubhouse to a reporter, that, no, they did not use anything after 2017. And that sort of ties back to Boone, because that was one of the first questions that was asked to Boone. Are you convinced that the Astros were not doing anything in 2019 postseason? And he said, no. That's one of the great unknowns, and I think it's going to be one of the great unknowns going forward, and that's what sort of all the players are saying. Aroldis Chapman was asked about Altuve's home run. He said, well, you're going to have to ask Altuve. Only Altuve knows, sort of thing. And I get it. I get all these questions. Tanaka came in. He said, I feel cheated out of 2017. And Judge obviously pulled down his Instagram post when he congratulated Altuve on winning the 2017 MVP. So yeah, I totally understand. Like, these questions are asked, and these players are going to answer these questions. It's the first time a lot of these guys are face to face with the media, and if they use this as motivation this season to absolutely kick the shit out of the Astros, more power to them.
They gotta wait for a long time for that to happen in the Bronx, but yeah, it'll happen a little earlier.
No, but you can use that as a chip on your shoulder the entire season. Take it into the season. Like, here's our goal. Our goal is to get the best record in the American League so we can play at home in the postseason. And hopefully the Astros do come to the Bronx in the postseason and we can absolutely demolish them, because that is the sweetest revenge.
Yeah.
That is the sweetest revenge. It's not the Astros
vacating
missing
titles
the playoffs
or any of that stuff.
Vacating
yeah.
titles or having players suspended. The sweetest revenge is the Astros thinking they're still hot shit and then coming to the Bronx, not being able to wear buzzers and not having trash can bangs and not cheating and getting absolutely destroyed. That is the only way you're going to completely have revenge, in my mind.
Best quote from the players of the week was Gary Sanchez talking about Altuve's game 6 home run. And he says, "I can tell you this. If I hit a home run to send my team to the World Series, they can rip off my pants. They can rip off anything." That's beautiful.
It was so funny.
That is beautiful.
And it was obviously said through a translator, so I feel like it's even better. Like, the translator looks at him like, you really want to say, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Did I think I was going to be thinking about Gary Sanchez with his pants off? No, but here we are.
That's great. It's a perfect line, because basically it doesn't matter. None of that matters in the moment when you have the, you know, elation of hitting that home run and moving your team forward. None of that matters. No one's thinking that. No one's thinking about their wife getting mad at them for taking their shirt off. No.
So, and if she really did, well, then you could be like, really? You're actually mad about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, like, like, you should really evaluate, like, pick your battles. Pick your battles. Yeah.
And other players who are no longer on the team, Sabathia has obviously talked about it on his podcast. David Robertson said, We're never going to get 2017 back. We're never going to get that group of guys back with a chance to win a World Series. And that's, I think, really the
he was so good of it. He was so good that year too.
Yeah, and he pitched his ass off in the postseason.
That's what I mean.
He did whatever the team needed. So he's sitting there saying, we had something special and it could have potentially been taken away from us because another team wasn't on the up and up. And Jim Crane's sitting there saying, we don't believe it affected the game on the field, which is just complete horseshit, because if it didn't give you an advantage, even a 0.1% advantage, even if it gave you a 0.1% advantage, that's an advantage. What are you doing it for if it doesn't give you an advantage? So it's just a complete, utter lie and slap in the face, a spit in the face to everyone for him to sit there and say that. But I have a hard time saying the Yankees lost the 2017 ALCS because the Astros were cheating.
It's really hard not to say it because of how tight it was, and then it came down to game seven.
Did the pitchers cheat? Did the Houston until we find out, if we find out the Houston Astros pitchers were cheating, then yeah. But the Yankees offense didn't score in Houston.
Yeah, I understand.
What does that have to do with the trash can banking? They scored 3 runs in 36 innings in Houston in that series.
There's just a lot of different
three
scenarios.
3 runs in 4 games. I know there's a lot of different scenarios. They lost the first 2 games by 1 run. So maybe if the Astros don't have the trash can bangs or whatever they were doing in the 2017 postseason, maybe they don't win one of those first 2 games. But the Yankees hit 159 in Houston in that playoffs.
Yeah.
So it's still, you got to look yourself in the mirror and say, what didn't we do? Because the Astros didn't hit really either.
They were, yeah, you know what? Yankees, they were probably putting up like a white panel in the exact area that they needed to be so that you could blend the ball in. They were probably doing something shady. That's the only thing I can
well,
think
I feel
of.
Like that gets called out super quick.
Yeah, but I mean, who's seen that? It's like going up and down. You know, it's like a quick white, like a green screen. I just expect to find out at some point that, yes, they were doing something shady on that side too. That's my expectation.
Well, Trevor Bauer thinks they were using substances to increase spin rate.
Yes. That was what I was trying to tell you about that article and where that kind of stemmed from and like how this started getting bleeding into baseball, because it's very interesting when you see when that article was printed in late 2017 and the amount of blisters and like different topical agents and different things that were happening. It's very interesting. And Bauer knows, man.
Did you see his article on the Players Tribune? Did you read it?
Yeah, I've been all over Trevor Bauer lately.
So he wrote an article for the Players Tribune talking, I think it was titled, "I Wish I Was Wrong." And he goes back and talks about how when he openly accused the Astros pitchers of using substances to increase spin rate, he says he did that because he felt more comfortable just sort of broadly attacking that than attacking what he actually knew what was going on and what players around the league knew what was going on, and which is the sign stealing.
Right. Yeah, and I understand that. I think he's trying to do it in a way that's not so whistleblowy. So he's not naming names, essentially, but
well, he's naming a completely different component of the team, because one thing he's saying is the pitchers are cheating. He's not saying anything about the offense, and apparently that was really his big problem. And he says it was going on behind closed doors. Like, guys were talking about it behind closed doors. Like, hey, what the hell are the Astros doing?
Yeah, well, no kidding. The spin rate, when you have guys coming over from the
Pirates. Not talking about the spin rate. Talking about the offense.
The article said
it was discussed behind closed doors that we all knew something was going on.
Yes. I understand that. But from his angle, he's a pitcher. Like, it's directly affecting his payday. The things that he's doing are supposed to be the same level playing field as everybody else. And when you have other guys doing other things, I fully believe Trevor Bauer to me has extreme credibility right now. Because it's not a good thing to like compare him to Canseco in that way, but Canseco had the element of not giving a rat's ass, like just talking. And I think Bauer has that same mentality or that same approach. He just doesn't care. It's very clear that he doesn't care about any repercussions in what he talks about when he's talking about the league or anybody else. I mean, he's calling Manfred out by name and saying how dumb he is. So you could tell that he's being very true to the way he thinks, because he's a little crazy and I love it.
He's a lot crazy. Well, he even admits, like, I rub people the wrong way.
Well, I mean, you'd be blind not to know that. He knows that. He's not stupid.
Well, that's possibly one of the reasons he was traded out of Cleveland.
Well, yeah, he knows that too. He knows his place. He knows his stance in the world. He knows that he rubs people the wrong way because he's a little bit odd and a little bit different, a little bit unique. And he does things that most people shy away from. And what's been the norm, a lot of people don't say their opinion. They stand back. They you know, let the Major League Baseball narrative take over, and they just kind of walk the company line. And Bauer's not that guy, and he's never been that guy. So it's refreshing.
Yeah. Yeah, he just eviscerated Manfred on the postseason proposal. So just a couple more takeaways from Boone's press conference. He talked that he saw Domingo Germán in the Dominican Republic, who's working out, but he's not going to be at spring training, obviously. Domingo Germán posted on his Instagram, and he was working out in the Hug Season t-shirt.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, man. You couldn't have done that. Couldn't have done that last year. I'm like, come on.
I know. Boone said
take my shirt off.
I found this interesting about Stanton. He said he's going to – not sure how much time he's going to play in the outfield, and he's going to get a fair amount of time at DH. Why is he already just relegated to the fact that Stanton's just a DH? I don't understand that.
He's not. He's talking about he's going to get a fair amount. I mean, when I see the words fair amount, that doesn't mean an absurd amount of time at the DH. I think it's known that he's going to be in the DH spot a lot.
Yeah, what is wrong with Stanton and his body if that he can't play the outfield every day? He did it in the National League, but he gets to the American League and it's like, nope, he's too fragile to play the outfield even half the time. I just don't understand it.
Well, I mean, I think when you're a guy that is, you know, I don't want to say he's breaking down, but he's been breaking down in certain areas. And so many of these injuries have been relatively mysterious. Like, we don't know what happened on certain
last year was a debacle. It was like an elbow. It was a bicep. It was a shoulder. It was a knee. It's like, oh, he took a pitch off the shin, but his bicep is torn. What do those two things have to do?
But when you have a guy that has the capabilities of a Giancarlo Stanton at the plate, and you understand that he's getting older, he's a big dude. Like, it's not, he can break down a little bit more easily than other guys, I think. And in that, because of that, you're going to kind of, you know, make sure that he has the time at designated hitter, which takes away, you know, half of the grind on the body. It's the most obvious thing in the world to me.
Well, then that indicates to me, early indication that we're going to see a lot of Gardner and Talkman starting in the outfield on the same day, which I did not think was going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Gardner as being another older guy as well, there's going to be a lot of... What I'm surprised, honestly, is that there's not another outfielder that's in the mix so far. I mean, I know we have some minor league guys.
Frazier.
And we got Tyler Wade. I mean, is he really, though? Is he a considered guy?
Is he not in the mix right now?
Because he can't play the outfield.
If he's not in the mix?
Because he can't play the outfield. That's okay, the problem. He can't play.
Okay, but he's in the mix. Right now, he's the fifth on the depth chart.
He's so easily forgotten about. I know, but he's fifth, but might as well be ninth, because if you have a guy that could play defense, he's ahead of him. That's why Maben got the opportunity. That's why they went out and found people that could play defense. It doesn't matter if your fifth outfielder can hit the lights out. I mean, it's almost a waste, because that guy's not going to be hitting all the time. What you need for him to do is be able to field the ball and then put together good at-bats when he's there. He's not supposed to be the guy that's going to light it up offensively. That's not the designated role of a fifth outfielder.
He's going to get another chance to play the outfield. He's not as bad as he was last year. No one is as bad as Clint Frazier was in the outfield last year. You wouldn't get to the point he's at in baseball if you were that bad in the outfield.
Yeah, unless he is. You can get away with it, I think, a lot in lower levels.
No, come on, he could not catch the ball.
Yes, I mean it was. That game was a microcosm, and you look under a microscope in that one game, and yes, it was a disaster of a game. You can almost, like, to me, I'm not even looking at that game. Like, once mentally he was jacked up, so there's a few different things here. Like, mentally he's got to get beyond this culmination of the bad day. Throw that out and look at the other parts, the other games of what he was. It's almost like I'm throwing out London. I'm throwing out that game for Clint Frazier as well.
You have to.
Because you look at the other parts of it, he still takes bad routes to the ball. He still misses the ball sometimes. He misses cutoffs. He's got a strong arm, but is it accurate? There's a lot of other things that go into the fact that he can't play defense besides that game. I know that's the one everybody wants to talk about. It's like Greg Bird's home run. Throw them away. Look at everything else.
It's like a swimmer gets to the Olympics, jumps in the pool, and just sinks to the bottom. No, you got to the Olympics. You can obviously swim.
Yeah.
Clint Frazier got to the major leagues. He can obviously catch the ball. So... It's a matter of, is he going to be even an average outfielder? And we don't know. So he also talked about, Boone did, about Paxton, said early returns are good and that Montgomery is the front runner to replace him in the rotation. And this brings up an interesting article that the New York Daily News posted this week. They cited a University of Pennsylvania spinal surgeon expert. His name was Dr. Michael Murray. He said there's a 90% chance that with good rehab, Paxton will return to full strength by the end of the 2020 season. And he said he would recommend to his patients who would have similar surgery, don't do anything strenuous for the first few months. So I'm just kind of confused. I know everybody's body is different, and he did not operate on Paxton, so he does not have a say on Paxton. But I just find it interesting that he's saying, no, nothing for the first few months, and the Yankees are saying, well, he's going to be back pitching in the major leagues in a few months.
Yeah, I mean, they're very different. They're very different outcomes as far as what happens after the surgery. Look, this guy understands what what's happening on a general surface level, I think, with Paxton, but he doesn't. He's not in there looking at the MRIs. He's not looking at the X-rays. He's not in there looking at all the exact details of what's happening. So it's kind of hard to take his opinion on this very specific scenario with a lot of reasoning behind it and why he's making this determination. I mean, like, there's no context. What he's looking at is the type of injury, right? And the type of what he would recommend for his patients that are not Major League Baseball pitchers or not James Paxton in this particular scenario. So I don't really listen to the guy. I think more the Daily News is like, oh, this guy says he's going to be out for the year. Let's put this up, publish it, so that if there's any delay at all in James Paxton, we had it. We had the story.
If June 1st, that's the over-under date that Paxton returns, what are you taking?
Oh, man. If it's June 1st, I will say the over.
Yeah.
Because there's always going to be a delay, right?
4 months is June. He had the surgery February 5th. So February to March to April to May to June, that's 4 months. They said 3 to 4 months.
If I'm guessing, I would say middle of June, early, like middle of June up to the All-Star break.
Does he make a start before the All-Star break?
Yeah, I think so.
But it's probably going to be right in that couple weeks before the All-Star break.
If he's back before the All-Star break, I would not expect him to have more than 3 starts.
Well, what about Boris saying first third of the season? First third of the season is before June 1st. It's the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah, if you believe Scott Boris in anything he says, I got a whole bag to sell you. I got a whole bag to sell you of excuses that the Houston Astros are using right now.
So the final guy that I think is interesting to talk about comments on the Astros is Garrett Cole. He said, I don't think I have much to apologize for. We talked about this a few weeks ago. Is Garrett Cole going to address it? And I sort of talked myself through the process and I was like, oh yeah, he wasn't on the 2017 team. So he has no confirmed ties to the cheating Astros. He said he had no idea of anything going on. If anything was going on past 2017, he said, I had no idea it was going on, which I don't believe. But he said, I don't think I have much to apologize for. Do you have a problem with anything he said?
No, it's pretty much what I expected. He's just skirting the issue and moving on because he's already got the crowd on his side. So yeah, why give them any fuel whatsoever? I mean, maybe some will say he's not saying anything about it and that's fuel, but that's better fuel than like opening up a little bit of a Pandora's box.
Do you think the Astros were cheating in 2018 and 2019?
Yes.
Do you think then Garrett Cole knew about it?
Yes.
I agree.
And I think the one person, I mean, probably not the one person because he's paid and he really doesn't at the end of the day. Does he really care? But these guys are all like, yo, they're all so worried about Trevor Bauer right now. They're all like, dude, Trevor, please just stop. They know that he's such a loose cannon. And they're all worried. They're all worried, scared to death.
But he doesn't actually have any
bullshit
proof. He doesn't have any proof.
I bet he does.
He's thrown accusations before and everyone just poo-pooed him.
Yeah.
When he said the Astros are doing the spin rate substances and they were all shot down.
Yeah.
So if he says, oh, the Astros were cheating in 2018, 2019, every fan's going to be like, oh my God, look, duh.
Yeah.
And all the players are going to be like, no, the commissioner didn't find anything past 2017.
Yeah. Until Trevor Bauer comes out with the evidence that he has. That he does have behind the scenes.
See, I don't think he's going to actually.
You don't think Trevor Bauer's bugging himself talking to people? I do. I think Trevor Bauer has.
Well, no one's if anyone's smart, they're not talking to Trevor Bauer.
I think Trevor Bauer is bugging training rooms. He's bugging the visitors' clubhouse when the Astros are coming into town. When he was with the Indians, I bet Trevor Bauer has a whole underground scheme to expose these, and he's just letting them dig and dig. And dig and deny, and then he's gonna come out and be like, "Boop, mic drop, here it is," and just everybody's gonna torch it. He's just gonna light the world on fire and walk out.
I recommend that you read his article, not you, but people, because it was actually good, and he talked about a few other things. He said, "I have used substances to get better spin rate, like not in a game, but just in practice and stuff." And he's like, yeah, this is amazing. If you could use this, like, yeah, here's another 500 RPMs on my fastball. And all of a sudden I'm Cy Young. And he also said, I have no problem with the sign stealing, the art of sign stealing in game. He says he has no problem with it. And he says, that's why we change signs. It's to combat sign stealing.
Yeah.
But it's impossible to combat it, obviously, when you're using high-tech cameras to relay stuff in real time.
Do you combat it or combat it?
Oh, yeah, you combat it, not combat it. Well, combat, you fight, so it's just a different... Are they not the same word?
Pretty sure it's the same word. I'm just wondering how you use the emphasis on the syllable.
The emphasis? All right, guys, I'm going to take a minute to tell you guys about our sponsor, Bet Online. You've heard us talking about them over the past couple weeks. They're one of our new sponsors for this season, and we are very excited about it. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all things sports. March Madness, the Masters, and Major League Opening Day are right around the corner. Bet Online has you covered for all your latest news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. The best part, when you sign up, you receive 50% welcome bonus. The Wilder Fury rematch goes down this Saturday night, and we can't think of a better way to wager on the fight than doing it with actual free money. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's betonline.ag. You got to have the .ag, and Blue Wire is the promo code. That's all one word. We signed up. It's super easy. And if you're already into betting, which we know a lot of you guys out there are, this is a fantastic way to support our podcast. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, when you sign up at betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Let's talk about Pecota win-loss projections, one of Scott's favorite
Yes,
topics.
Let's go. Let, I can't wait.
If you're out there and you don't know what Pecota is, it stands for Player Empirical Comparison and Optimization Test Algorithm. I said that with a straight face.
Yeah. It's nerd speak for projections.
So they project player stats, but they also project team win-loss totals. And basically what it does is it simulates thousands of different outcomes for the season, and the ones that most commonly occur, it says, okay, this is probably going to happen, so here's our results. And their results came back with the Yankees winning 99 games and winning the AL East by 12 games over Tampa. Do you think, couple parts, 99 wins, are you taking the over-under on that? And also, will the Yankees win the division by as healthy a margin as 12 games?
I'm taking the over, and I'm definitely not thinking they're going to win by 12 games because I think Tampa's good. I'm surprised that they have, that these projections have Tampa where they are, because Tampa, man, they have not only what they have on their major league level and what they showed last year with their pitching, but theoretically they're going to be healthier pitching wise. And when you see their top three, it's freaking nasty. You add Glasnow and you look at Snell and Charlie Morton, you know, with or without substances, I don't know, but with substances, I mean, like, holy cow, they could add how many more RPMs to that top three? That's pretty damn good. But they're young guys that are not even in the major leagues yet are filthy. They have some really good top talent that's almost ready to go, if not ready to go right now. So that's the team, honestly, when I circle a team that I'm a little worried about, like in the American League, it's Tampa.
Tampa had won 96 games last year, and they maxed out their potential.
Kevin Cash is a good manager.
No, he's a great manager, and they are so creative in the way that they win games.
Yeah,
they have to be. But I feel like 96 wins was like really maxing out their potential last year.
Well, I mean, I don't really think so.
Because Yankees won 103.
But if you look at what they did on the pitching side too, they didn't have great years from their big guys. Glasnow, I mean, has been injured. That's his MO. He's been injured a lot of his career. When he was healthy at the beginning of the season last year, if you remember, like, he was Cy Young for the first month. Like, the guy was nasty, and then
so you're saying the Rays are going to win more than their projected win total because they're going to be healthier. Similar reason to why you're taking over on the 99 wins for the Yankees, because they're going to be healthier than last year, and they won 103 games last year. Yeah, maybe they overachieved to win 103 games, but you can't be as injured as the Yankees were last year, and they won 103.
Knock on wood, please. They can't.
I would also take the over on 99. I think 100 to 105 is where the Yankees are going to finish. 12 games is a lot, though. That means
it's a lot of games. That's a lot.
But if the Yankees really are having a great season and they win 103 games again, I mean, the Rays take a slight step back, still make the playoffs, but win 91 games.
I think they're better than a 91. If you look at what their roster was last year, and then you look at what's happened in the American League East as well, there's winnable games there. There's a lot of winnable games in the American League. I haven't looked at the you know, how their schedule stacks up, but as far as like when they play certain people, but I got to believe it's relatively similar to what the Yankees is. They're just a good team, man. And if they could stay healthy, if they have top three pitchers could stay healthy and they could keep those guys rolling out there, they're going to be a pain in the ass. They really are. They are going to
be a pain
in the ass.
Well, they're always going to be a pain in the ass just from the way they play games.
And yeah, but now they have a lot of very good top talent that's super young. And they're rising through the ranks. And you know that they're looking at all this stuff, too, as the guys that, again, nobody really chalks up. We won 96 games. Is anybody talking about us? No, no one's talking about the Tampa Bay Rays. But they're
so you think they're going to blow out 87?
This may be the year that I stop calling them the Devil Rays, honestly.
Yeah, they're going to blow out 87 wins.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
The projections also have the Twins winning their division again by a pretty healthy margin over the Indians. The Astros winning their division, no surprise there. They're still a freakishly talented team over the Angels. The Mets actually winning a close division in the NL East. The Reds surprisingly win the NL Central. And the Dodgers being the best team in baseball, winning 102 games, just blowing everyone out. The Padres finishing under 500. So it's like not even a competition out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bad division. you could argue that the Diamondbacks got better, but you know, who knows? I mean, if Madison Bumgarner can have a resurgence,
the Dodgers are gonna have their division locked up by July.
Yep, like, yeah, seriously, like I'd say after the All-Star break, pretty damn close to it, they're gonna be healthy lead ahead. I mean, they're so deep in a really bad division. I mean, the Astros, that I think the AL West could be interesting, but I say that every year, and you see some of these teams that are theoretically going to take that next step. I mean, I think the Rangers...
Oakland 2 years ago won 97 games.
Yeah, I don't think they've gotten that much better, though. I think that the Rangers have gotten a little bit better. I think that the Angels are definitely better. You know, we'll see if they can pitch, but it comes down to them being able to pitch. And if they're...
They added Rendon, but they still don't have pitching.
I know. It depends on how that actually happens and how these guys...
So their team is Mike Trout, best player in baseball. Rendon, a top 20 player in baseball, wherever he falls. And then Shohei Ohtani, who's who knows? He's a gimmick. Like, yeah, he could be really good or he could
He's a good gimmick when he's on the field. We just don't know when...
Exactly.
You know, how long that's going to happen. We haven't
seen
anything.
So you saw what the Yankees did with standing injuries last year. They were so deep. The Angels, as deep as the Yankees are, the Angels are shallow.
Yeah.
They've got the best player in baseball and that's it.
Right. And so the Rangers, I'm looking at the Rangers as taking a much, they have them at 73 wins. I could see them.
Yeah, but they had Lance Lynn and,
Mike Minor
finish getting Cy Young votes last year. Is that going to happen again?
It doesn't need to happen, but what it says is
to take a step forward. They're going to need to repeat.
They need to look at other, what I see is that, those guys like being very, very good. And whether they, you know, mirror what they did last year or just kind of build on that and have put together a very good year. A lot of things like offensively too, if you start adding Greg Bird, you know, maybe they just get unrealistic, unbelievable production from first base from a guy that's got a huge chip on his shoulder and a
over under Major League Baseball games that Greg Bird plays this year. 0.5. What are you taking? In the Major Leagues.
Yeah.
0.5. So does he play a game?
Actually, I'll say yes.
Okay.
Because it's going to be spiteful. Although I don't believe it.
He'll get called up. He'll play like 15 games, hit like 6 home runs. Every Yankee fan's going to lose their mind, and then he's going to have a foot injury and be lost to the abyss once again.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy that is hanging on by a thread, so we'll see. I mean, do you wish good things for him? Do you want him to do well?
I don't necessarily wish good things, but I don't wish ill will on him.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I'm in the same boat. I don't want to see it. If I'm being very honest, I don't want to see it. I'm not going to root against it, but
given the choice, I would want to see it just for the hilarity.
I don't.
Podcast content.
Oh God, no. Because then you're looking at, you know, the lefty first baseman that we've always needed and
but
wanted.
It's not, but in that scenario, it's just horrific luck from the Yankees perspective, because it's not like they didn't give him ample opportunity. They gave him 5 years of opportunity and he just kept getting injured. So what is a team to do? You have to move on. I don't blame the Yankees. I will not blame the...
I don't blame the Yankees one bit. It's not that...
Greg Bird turns into a competent major league player, I'm not going to blame the Yankees. I'm just going to say, well, that's a really shitty bad luck situation.
I'm looking at their depth chart based on position.
He didn't even sign him. It's a minor league contract.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. It's an invitation.
It's
a camp
training.
Invite, baby. It's a tryout, is what it is. But I'm looking at their
going to the tryouts.
I'm looking at the depth chart here. I mean, he's got to outplay Logan Forsythe.
That's it?
You know, sprinkle some other guys in there. That Guzman kid is there, but is he really a... I mean, I guess he could be projecting as their long-term
vision
there.
Okay, but what if the Rangers
got to beat Guzman, who's a 25-year-old.
What if the Rangers fall for the classic Greg Bird spring training MVP run?
Oh, they will. They will.
He hits 400 and has 6 home runs in spring training.
Yes. He will be the opening day first baseman.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I could see that happening. But I don't believe that Greg Bird can even hit in spring training anymore. I think that's beyond. That's gone. That's out the window.
You underestimate Greg Bird. Let's move on to the, I don't know what adjective to use, but the proposal, the utterly ridiculous, moronic, I think trolling proposal of the revised Major League Baseball postseason that was announced a couple days ago after the next CBA. So starting in 2022, this would be the new playoff format. Each league has 7 teams instead of 5. The first round is called the wild card round. So the current one game wild card game is going away. Instead, it's going to be 6 teams playing 3 game series. So 3 series, 3 game series going on all at the same time. The team with the best record hosts all 3 of those games, and they get to pick in order of record which teams they want to play. The top seed in each league gets a bye, and then teams, as the playoffs go on, teams with the better record get to pick their opponent, which only comes into factor in the first 2 rounds, because after that, you're just left with whatever opponent is left. My, oh my, is this quite a proposal. There's parts of it I don't hate. It is dumb. It is absolutely dumb, and I do think there's part of it where they're saying, hey, look at this shiny ball over here. Don't pay attention to the shitstorm that is the Houston Astros, the Boston Red Sox, and the cheating scandal.
This was a bad way. This was a dumb way to do it, though, because it didn't take anything off. It just added. It just layered onto the incompetence.
It just did. It just added on. Yeah,
yeah. It was really. There's parts that just, it just goes to the point that how out of touch Major League Baseball is in general.
It's an out of touch proposal, and it is ridiculous because I can list so many more important issues that Major League Baseball should fix before they touch the playoffs. In no specific order, the cheating epidemic, not just the sign stealing, but just the overall cheating epidemic in Major League Baseball, the length of games and the pace of play, the length of the season, because 162 games is just too long, minor league wages, arbitration process and system that is just completely broken, and with the exception of this year, the free agency being kind of broken, the overall replay process, terrible umpiring.
Which go hand in hand.
And inconsistent construction of the baseball, which caused a spike in home runs last year that we have never seen before. Those are all bigger issues than the Major League Baseball postseason, which I think is a really good product. It's confined to a month. Doesn't take too long. You get the wild card game, which people don't like it. But guess what? You didn't win your division, so you don't get to play a full series. You just have to do a do-or-die game. I actually am on board with that. And then the games happen one after another. Yeah, they're probably too long, but it's fine. It's postseason. And we get it done at the end of October. Boom. Done. Postseason is good. The season's too long. Postseason is good. I don't know what MLB is doing with this thing.
I mean, all they had to do was leave out the team with the best record would pick their opponents. If they left that out, that one element of this proposal, I don't think you'd see a ton of backlash on it. You probably wouldn't.
Well, that is just a TV gimmick.
I know, but that's the thing. It's a gimmick. When you add the gimmick,
we're mad.
When you add the gimmick, you're adding something that's just utterly ridiculous. And you're making it now like a sideshow and not actually what should happen based on, you know, the 162 game season that they just played. And now they are playing the opponents that they're supposed to play because of what they did in the regular season. Let's just throw that out and give the top player teams to the control to do whatever the hell they want.
Right. So what's the point of winning your division now? You actually have no incentive to win your division now.
Yeah, it's really just one of those things that's dumb. But
under this format, in order to make it fair, they would need to get rid of all divisions and every team in the league would have to play each other an equal amount of time. Otherwise, it's unfair. Because right now with divisions, you say, well, why is it fair that the Yankees and Red Sox have to play 19 times, but the Yankees and the Mariners only play X amount of, you know, 7 times a year? It's because the Yankees and Red Sox are competing for the same thing, their division title. The Yankees and Mariners are not competing for the same thing because the Yankees are not competing for the NL West. But under this new proposal, you're just competing for a top 7 spot. Doesn't matter. So you're now all competing for the same thing. So you should play each other the equal amount of times, and they would never be able to do that with the current construction of Major League Baseball because of travel.
Here's the problem.
So this just doesn't make sense on so many levels.
Here's another issue that I have with what they're trying to do. And like I know what they're aiming for when they're adding more teams to the playoffs. They want more close races at the end of the season, and they want more fan bases that are potentially in the playoffs come end of September. You know, and the playoffs are starting.
That's the
in
part
a few
of
weeks.
It I don't hate. That's the only part of it I don't.
Here's
hate.
The problem with this. The theory is okay. We get more fan bases in. I get that. But you also now are adding more teams that are mediocre to this mix. You're adding teams that are worse to a mix.
Last year, the Red Sox and the Indians would have also made the playoffs.
Right.
Those are better than mediocre teams.
The Red Sox were pretty mediocre last year. You add the those names out of it though. The Indians had a surge. They probably should have been better, but you have the. You definitely have the ability or the possibility of adding some of these really, really bad teams, especially in the National League. I'm thinking more the National League of like some of these guys that are under 500 competing for the seventh spot, like under 500 competing for the seventh spot.
It would be rare when that happened, but you're going to get like a lot of 84 win teams that would get like the seventh spot. And in baseball, it's not that hard for an 84 win team
to get hot.
Take two out of three from a 97 win team. It's not that hard.
It takes away the importance of the regular season. Thus, what's the point in playing that many games? Thus, what's the point in these guys grinding out if you're really just going to practically make everybody towards the end of the year?
If you're going to do a round robin tournament at the end of the year, don't play 162 games. Play 100 games. And even that's probably too many.
What you're going to start getting?
Because you're just doing a round robin tournament. So what is the point of winning 98 regular season games if I'm just in a 3-game round robin tournament against an 84 win team? There's no point.
It takes
just play 100 games.
It takes away from why the baseball team is set up and is organized and is assembled in the way that it is. The reason they have 5 starting pitchers and X amount of bullpen arms is because it's a long season, because these are long series in the playoffs, and you need those guys to do this because it's not a natural motion to throw a ball 100 miles an hour to another guy with a bat. And when you have that scenario in a very short series, well, now you're only making these teams top heavy. You're not looking at a team's depth. You're not looking at what the Yankees were last year when they were just, obliterated by injury, and they got to a point where they were so deep, and that was a payoff. That was a good thing for them. Now you're just making everything top heavy because these short series are there. And if you have a top heavy team that's 84 wins, that could very well happen. You could have one or two badass pitchers that could come in there and step up and shut down a team that won 100 games and move on. You could see that scenario playing out.
You don't even need it to have a badass pitcher.
You could get lucky.
Good teams lose series to inferior opponents constantly.
Yes.
Constantly. So it's not hard to fathom. The Angels winning 83 games, going into a series against the Yankees, let's say, who won 97 games, and taking 2 out of 3 because Mike Trout hits 500 in the series, right?
Yeah, or the Diamondbacks winning... This is like scenario from hell. Diamondbacks winning like 75 games, going into the playoffs, and all of a sudden Madison Bumgarner becomes Madison Bumgarner because you know why? Because they're resting him. Because that's what this is going to happen also. We're looking at the, what do they call it? Injury, what do they call a player in the NBA? There's a term for it.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, they're
load management.
So that's what Kawhi, everybody's on Kawhi and LeBron for sometimes like taking nights off so that they can sit back and like save that energy for later in the, that's what you're going to start seeing in baseball. You're starting to see with pitchers because of the amount of contracts too. I mean, like that's an element too, but you're going to start seeing worse baseball in the season, but they're not
short in the season. No, I know they're not,
but they're not doing that.
I would not hate this setup if you shorten the season significantly, because then, okay, it makes sense. You're de-emphasizing the regular season, and you're putting out a TV product like a tournament, basically. But there's no point of having a tournament at the end of the season after you just played 162 games to weed out all the shitty teams. And we haven't even touched on the fact that if you do get the number one seed, you have a week off.
Which is not good for a baseball team.
it's already 5 days off, right? Because you have Sunday is usually the last day, is the last day of the regular season. And if you're not playing in that wild card game, your series doesn't start until Thursday or Friday. Last year, the Yankees played on Friday night against the Twins. So they didn't play Monday through Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, and I know you could go both ways, and some people think it's a positive thing to have some time off. Some people don't. Like, it depends, I think, in your scenario, too, like what kind of a team you are. Theoretically, if you're one of those teams fighting for it and you get hot, like you don't want to sit, but you probably won't because you're fighting to get in anyway. So the rest is good for certain teams. It just depends. The thing is, though, is what it's doing is it's changing how they play. When you're playing 162 games in a regular season, you're getting used to playing a certain way, and that's every day. You're preparing your body to play every day. And that's what baseball has done forever. Like, you're just playing a lot more than any other sport. Now we're going to change that. Let's just take some more time off when it matters the most.
It baffles me how out of touch Major League Baseball is sometimes.
It's like they try to turn the little knobs in little areas, and they're doing it all wrong. They're doing it all wrong. And they're trying to get the, you know, like a little bit of a buzz, and there's no looking down the line and like what they're doing to the game in general. I mean, Trevor Bauer had a really good example when he's talking about they lost a generation in the way that MBAM has protected everything and like held everything in so tight. All the clips, basically all of the media you could possibly ask for, they've held it tight and not given it. For the longest time, we couldn't even have the word Yankees on this podcast. Because they were flagging, when we first started podcasting, they were flagging podcasts that had the word Yankees or anything relating to the word Yankees, and they were taking them down. So we had to name it. We couldn't even have those words in the description because they were getting flagged. So they were at that level where they were taking things down and just controlling every possible thing that they did lose, like Bauer was talking about. They lost, you know, some years in there and a generation of fans because they didn't have access to this stuff. And this is the digital age, like we were talking about earlier. These kids are growing up with touch screens and immediate access to everything and anything. And baseball's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. And it's hurt the game.
Yeah, and the idea here is you're going to get more people interested because there's more fan bases involved. And it's a wrinkle, certainly. And it's more of a tournament style, more NCAA sort of tournament style. Okay, so you're going to get more eyeballs. It's exactly. You might get more eyeballs on that weird round where everyone picks their opponent. But that's not sustainable because the games, regular season games are going to still be broken. I think the regular season game right now is broken. There were so many boring games last year. All it is, it's a four-hour game of solo home runs. I'm sorry. That's not exciting.
Well, the reason you're talking about, though, is because it's because of the game, the way the game has changed and progressed into this, you know, all-or-nothing mentality, which is the home run or the strikeout. And when you add a home run or a strikeout, we've talked about this a number of times in the past, in the sense that you almost can become numb to a home run because you've seen it so often that it's not chicks dig the long ball as much anymore. Because in that day, when that was happening, one, you had guys out of their minds on steroids, which was fun looking back, like they were superheroes. And then but you're coming from an era where they were putting together hits, and you saw a different type of baseball. So it was a change. And I know we've gone through that change back to this now, where it's now all home runs and more strikeouts, but the strikeout is boring. The double in the gap is never boring. So the alternative of what's happening now is the sleepy side.
I said this last year, and I kind of got some shit for it, but the home run, when you see it so often, also becomes boring. Because, yeah, the guy hit a home run, and it's a run scored, but nothing happens. The game comes to a halt.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I think
so. It's not action.
Well, I think when you're trying to appeal to young,
you're scoring runs, and the ball's going 400 feet. Like, that's all great, but when it happens seven times a night, you become numb to it.
To a degree. I think when you're looking at the younger highlight audience too, because a lot of these guys, like you look at the kids that are coming up through high school and into, you know, their 20s, they grew up with the highlights. Like the highlights, SportsCenter was a thing very early. Then it's progressed to, you know, Bleacher Report and House of Highlights and all these things. And now you're seeing the culmination of all of this, where the Omar kid from House of Highlights is on SportsCenter running their Instagram page. So you see all these highlights, and yeah, you can get the highlights with home runs, especially if you add some cool like video effects to it. I've been doing a bunch of that stuff, like adding some glitch effects and like, but there's only so much you can do to like a big, if you get a guy hauling ass around first base and like diving into second with a fielder also picking up a ball and making a play, you have multiple things happening. You have more elements of a highlight reel than you do just one guy swinging a bat. It's just, there's different elements of the game that I think are not put on the forefront that are so much fun when you're talking about these guys taking extra bases or doing these things or stealing the bases. Because you can't steal a base when you're hitting a home run either. Like, there's a lot of the game that's taken out, and I think that's the fast excitement part of it.
Yeah, you don't get defensive plays if the ball doesn't go in play, yeah. And you can only get so much. Baseball doesn't want people just watching highlights. They want people tuning into the broadcast so they can get higher TV ratings and everything.
But the highlights get you there. They're the
highlights, but I don't think these highlights of another guy hitting another home run gets you there.
No, I agree. That's what I'm saying. Like, when you have the faster paced game, when you have the guys that are hitting more line drives, like you said, you have more defensive plays. You have more guys to showcase what they could do on the defensive side. Like, we see some great defensive plays. I mean, tick that up by like a times 10. If the approach is a little bit different, if that launch angle is taken down, you know, a half a percentage or whatever, a fraction of a percentage.
If guys still want to try and launch, they're going to still try and launch, but there's other things you can do, I think, with the baseball, but also with the strike zone that you can make it. So guys are going to have to swing more. If you expand, if you make the strike zone bigger, they're going to have to swing more. They're going to have to swing at better pitches earlier in the count to put the ball in play, because that is going to become a better way to score runs than trying to walk and hit a two-run home run.
Yeah. I mean, look, I love the game of baseball. I love the way that all of the elements with the amount of players that you have on one team is mixed together to have this game on the field where there's a lot of individual guys playing to one culmination. And I want people and young people to see that game, and I want them to see it in the best possible way. And I think when you're adding all these different elements of you know, taking away the, you know, putting on display worse baseball by adding more teams at the end, adding, you know, the jacking up the ball so that the ball is only hit out of the park, you're taking away elements from the game to me that make it great. And that's unfortunate, because the game by itself, naked, is amazing.
Right. Yeah. But it's sort of devolved into a product that I'm just not crazy about. And I'm still a huge baseball fan, and I'm a Yankees fan. So I want to see them win, and I'm going to continue to watch it. But like you said, we want to watch a good product. And you're starting to get Kemp into baseball. I hopefully will get my future children into baseball. And I would rather it be the product more similar to that I grew up with than what has been the last few, you know, 4 or 5 years.
And which is, I actually do see more. I mean, I think we're seeing a lot more athletes play baseball and stay in baseball as well. And I think when you start seeing that, you're going to start seeing the athletes on display. You're going to see a lot more athleticism. You're going to start seeing, you know, balls that, you know, maybe they're not hit out of the, I think we're going to see, I do believe that there's a trend in baseball and it will come back around. And I think that when you look at some of these successful teams and how they've been able to, you know, have a higher importance on base percentage, because to me, that's like one of the best stats out there. Give me on base percentage all day long. You give me guys with high OBP, I will have a good team. Bottom line. Right.
Mr. Billy Bean over there.
Yeah, I mean, it is. You add some things in there you can have, and you add good pitching. It's more fun. The Billy Bean, you know, days of old where they're adding guys that can do, you know, certain things around the, it was fun baseball to watch.
I have a question for you. What player do you think was like the most exciting to watch hit for the Yankees last year?
For last year, I think it was,
I don't know. Mine,
Glaber, probably. People, I think that Glaber would be the hot answer.
Mine was DJ LeMahieu.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love it. Me, personally, I love LeMahieu, yes.
No, me too. But, like, it was just line drives.
Yeah.
It was swinging at good pitches. It was contact. It was line drives. That, to me, I was most excited when he came around in the order.
I mean, anybody who listens to this show knows goddamn well that he was by far my favorite player. Like, this guy is just, like, the epitome of what I want. I think the answer to your question, though, if you ask people, would be Glaber. And maybe because there's there is an element of flashiness. There's an element of him, you know, being able to, he's got some personality in that sense. Like LeMahieu, I think people love him for what he does because he's just all business, but he doesn't have that personality side that Glaber has. He's got Glaber definitely appeals to the younger.
He's not
audience.
Trying to. He's, no. If anything, he's trying to subvert any personality he might have.
But you add a little bit of a personality to a guy that plays like LeMahieu does, that's dynamic. That's electric stuff right there.
Anything else on the postseason and the baseball? I mean, I just feel like there's been so many negative headlines, whether it's the negative reaction to the postseason proposal or this Mets thing where they're not going to allow minor leaguers to go into this $57 million renovation clubhouse because they, quote, want to give minor leaguers a reminder of the status they're working to earn. Like, that doesn't look good as a headline. The Red Sox naming an interim manager
because they're scared to death of him getting named in a report later down the line.
A Major League Baseball team reported to spring training and didn't have an official manager. He was named interim manager 12 hours after spring training technically started, which I just find baffling. How is that happening? So the cheating scandal updates, every day something new's coming out. Like the press conference that we already talked about was just an utter debacle. The Athletic posted a new thing about Beltran being, quote, the godfather of the whole operation, and no one wanted to challenge him in the clubhouse because he had 20 years of tenure and he's so respected in Major League Baseball. So if Beltran says, no, we're going to do trash can banging, Alex Bregman or anyone can't go to him and be like, I don't think we should do that because it's Carlos Beltran. That came out.
And by the way, there probably is an element of that. Like that, I don't dismiss that. I think that is a factor either. When you're in a clubhouse, but at the same time, these guys, if that actually happened, these guys, it tells more to who the leadership is on the team itself. Cause Carlos Beltran just got there. These guys
he just signed a free agent.
These
contract
guys
and
had
he
a
stunk.
These guys
he
had
wasn't even good.
A clubhouse. They were established in the clubhouse, like as far as like who had roles, what was going on. And if you're just going to let some guy walk in, no matter what his track record is and to do something to that level, that's on you too, man. I mean, I understand a little bit of it, but there's no possible way you could use that as an excuse.
Yeah. Cause like Altuve was established, well established in the Astros by 2017.
Bregman had been there.
Wasn't that Bregman's rookie year?
Was it his year? I thought he was there 16. I gotta look it up.
But
either
still,
way,
he's a pretty new, pretty fresh player.
He's a cocky little bitch. You don't think that kid could stand up and say something?
Well, he wanted to cheat
because cheat.
I want to use the existing Yankees clubhouse. Say they
2016
when they,
was his first year, but yeah, first full year was 17.
So. I mean, Beltran is such a great example of someone who just was ring chasing at the end of their career, came in. Okay, how about this? In 2017, when the Yankees signed Matt Holliday, like Matt Holliday is not the reputation of Beltran, but wouldn't you say very, very respected guy in Major League Baseball?
Oh, for sure.
Do you think there were players in the 2017 club that would have challenged Matt Holliday if he said, like if Matt Holliday came in and said, we're going to start cheating? Do you think Aaron Judge would have challenged Matt Holliday?
Yeah, I think it's a different. Yes, I do, and I think you could look around different areas. I don't think it would have been Aaron Judge. I think it would have been Brett.
Right, because you had Brett Gardner
and you had CeCe and you had guys that would say something.
Okay, I know, so it's not a fair comparison, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, like, I understand what you're saying.
It's very difficult for a young player to challenge someone like Carlos Beltran.
Let me ask you a question: what year did Brian McCann get there?
Same year.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. That's a guy that has had experience playing with Beltran.
Well, that's the article also. Like, if you're a Yankees fan, I read the article and I was like, oh boy, I can just see where this is going because the article in so many words said Beltran brought over the cheating from his previous team. It literally said that.
I mean, look, nothing would surprise me down the line. But my point, when you're talking about the Astros in a vacuum, the fact that you have a guy like McCann there who has no problem talking to Carlos Beltran in any way, He was on board with it.
McCann supposedly... No, McCann was not on board
with it. So then why didn't it shut down? So then if he was such the godfather and he was able to voice up to it, and he benefited from the banging too, by the way.
Do you know why he wasn't able to shut it down? And you know why AJ Hinch wasn't able to shut it down? Because it was working.
Yeah, of course, because they all wanted to do it because there was compliance on a lot of levels. Because it was probably coming down from Crane after he spoke with the intern.
If you're cheating and you're going up there and you're still not hitting home runs, well then, look, guys, what are we doing? But if you're cheating and you know a curveball's coming and you hit it to the moon, you're like, oh, that's fun. I have a cheat code. I just turned on anti-gravity.
It's also easy to say that Beltran was the guy when you look at the who benefited or who had all the bangs when you look back at that spreadsheet from what that dude did. And the fact that he was a player that doesn't play anymore and that he was a new guy to the team and he does have a track record and he's got, you know, links to Alex Cora, and he's just a very, very, very convenient guy to take the rap.
There was a very funny line in the Athletic article. It was quoting some executive or somebody in the Astros organization that said Beltran didn't even benefit from the cheating system. His approach at the plate that year was take the first pitch and swing at the second pitch no matter where it is.
I think what should happen is someone should be looking at trying to dig down in some offshore accounts to see how much money he was paid to take the fall. That's what I'm thinking.
Beltran doesn't need money.
Yeah, but he would, to take a fall like this, even if it was him in some level, like, it's a very convenient guy to throw everything on. He's like, I don't want to coach the Mets. Like, thank you for doing that. That was nice. And now he's just basically taking it all. He's going to go back to Puerto Rico, live an awesome life, live it on a beach or whatever. And yeah, would not surprise me if there was money under the table at all. Would not surprise me.
We don't have mailbag questions this episode. If you guys want to submit questions, bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. You can do the submit form. You can shoot us an email. You can tweet us and DM us and Facebook us and all that other stuff. I think once spring training starts to roll, we will get some more mailbag questions. The Astros stuff obviously was powering a lot of the mailbag questions for the offseason. Let's get to out of left field.
Find that out as Sanchez destroys that to left field.
There it goes. Deep to left. Really deep.
In the air to left field. Back at the track at the wall. We are tied.
I pissed on a public building.
Yeah.
Okay, Scott. So you have you got a little problem with voice commands?
So yeah, here's my little out of left field, and this is again growing up in a different age, right? You're growing up in and I love technology. Don't get me wrong. I think everything that's happening is a good thing when used correctly. But this voice activation nonsense. First of all, half the time it's not as convenient as people say it is. I have like some really good Bluetooth headphones that you have to tell the headphones to go volume up or volume down. I don't want to
do. Button.
No, it's all like, it's just like,
well, obviously you could use it on your phone.
I could use my phone to do it, but if my phone's like across the room and I want to turn it down.
Are they AirPods?
No, they're not. They're over the ear, like just that I said, Bluetooth headphones. And anyway, so I think people are getting a little cocky with it at the same time. Like, I just want a little dial or something, even if it's a touch button. Let me do that. But my gripe here's the gripe. The person that, and I was tweeting about this, that invented voice activation, the person who invented Alexa, did not have a child. There's no possible way that guy or girl
kids
had a child. He's not the guy that he's the one funding it. Because now Kemp can clearly say, Alexa. Alexa this.
This is like growing
Alexa
up
that.
In the digital
Alexa
age.
This.
We just talked about
Alexa
this.
That. And you can't stop him. I can't put a zipper on his mouth. He's just going to talk to Alexa. And Alexa's always there. Alexa doesn't go away unless I turn her off. And then what's the point of having it? But he can
Kemp
start.
Kemp is basically growing up with a digital butler.
Yes. He can start the music. He can stop the music when he wants. He can tell Alexa to put on something on television. He can tell her to turn it off. If he gets into his own little world and is in a mood where he wants to do something and you can't get him out of that, he can tell Alexa to do something. And it's only going to get worse for, I think, a few more years.
It's only a few years of your life. You'll get past it. Do you remember the first time you caught him saying?
It's not that I caught. There was a progression. It was a progression of being able to actually articulate the word Alexa, and now it's gotten to the point where it's clear as day.
I'm picturing like in Planet of the Apes when like you start realizing the monkeys are becoming sentient, and you're like, oh my god, he's
like it's happening.
He's learning.
Yes, that's
he's learning.
That's
like,
exactly.
He's sounding out Alexa. Oh god, I see where this is going. How do I stop it? The snowball has started down the hill. You cannot get it back.
No, as soon as I heard him go, like it's just gibberish, Alexa, and just like saying something with the same inflection that I would say it, I was like, oh, I am screwed.
So you know how Siri, you can change the name of Siri. You can call Siri whatever you want.
Yeah.
You can call it Bumblebee if you want to.
Right.
Can you do that for Alexa?
I don't know, but...
So switch it up on Kemp. So he's saying Alexa, but she's not listening.
He's a parrot. He's gonna understand that whatever I'm saying is there's something happening. These kids are smart, man. I'm telling you, they're growing.
They're growing them smart these days.
And the other thing that I don't think a lot of people realize is how intuitive all of these devices and voice commands and everything is. All of these things were built so that an idiot could do it, or built so that a toddler could do it, or a very young child could do it. Because now, I mean, he could pick up a phone and start swiping in the correct manner of swiping. It's crazy.
You gotta start teaching him some things that, like, we grew up with pre-technology.
So I do.
He has some street skills.
Oh, I do. Trust me. It's one of those things that I think about. I'm like, I don't want him to be completely reliant on these devices and voice commands. Like, I'm going to teach you to do things the hard way sometimes.
It's like, listen, this is how we used to listen to music. See this button? We used to have to press that button.
I used to have to get off my ass when the flicker was broken. And change. That's not it. I always had a remote, but you know, yeah, I'm gonna make life difficult in certain areas just so he understands it. Of course, I'm gonna do that.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I don't have an Alexa or Google Home or anything like that, and on my phone, I turned off Siri. It's pissed me off.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, it's
not that I'm not naive enough to know to think that my phone's still not listening to me. I know it is. But I don't like it just randomly thinking I'm trying to do a voice command when I'm not.
My sister and brother-in-law have the command system throughout the whole house. Like they control the lights. Everything with
Leanne's
with
parents
Amazon.
Are the same way.
And it's cool, but at the same time I'm like, damn, kind of scary. It's very convenient for when I watch him like close up shop at the end of the night. He's just like, Alexa, do this, and like everything just shuts down. Like that's pretty awesome. And the fact that you could do it remotely. Very convenient. But when the kids start getting into play, like, and I know he'll grow out of it and he'll understand. And he's already starting to understand, like, don't do that when it's not the right time. But yeah, the beginning was like, here's the understanding, the realization that he's able to do things now by just talking is crazy.
Well, maybe he should use Alexa to learn the rest of the words to take me out to the ball game.
Oh, are you, is that a shot? Is that a shot at Kemp? For not knowing all, is that a shot at a 2-year-old for not knowing all of the words?
It wasn't a shot.
I think it was
a suggestion.
I'm gonna tell him Andrew, that's who he calls you, is taking a shot at.
Except
your
he won't say it to me. He gets camera shy whenever you put him on our Skype calls to start the podcast. He's always got it down beforehand, and then the camera goes on, the bright lights. He gets cold feet. So
shot number two at Kemp in the last 30 seconds.
It's not a shot. He needs to, because he's going to take over the podcast one day. So he's going to
he's learned how to talk.
He's going to have to get comfortable on camera and on mic.
Well, he'll probably be able to do it by voice activations. Alexa, turn on the microphone. Alexa, stream live, and then just start talking into a perfectly the microphone that you know is in his eyelashes, and he'll be able to talk.
Alexa, express my thoughts on the Yankees right now.
Yeah, yeah. Just say it. He just sits back and chills. Yeah, so I'm sure he'll be fine.
Yeah, that was if no one knows what we're talking about, to take me out to the ball game. You tweeted out a video of him singing along to Take Me Out to the Ball Game. It was a really cute video.
It was more like horrible singing.
It was you singing and him getting enthusiastic about the lines that he remembered. It was very funny.
Yeah, he knows the lines. It's the timing and all that. Yeah. It's not there. My favorite part is when when he just starts like shaking his hand and like going ah for no reason. It's just it's hilarious.
It's like a John Sterling.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is. That's kind of what it is. But
is he gonna go to his first game at the stadium this year?
He's already been. No, he's been. We did that.
I thought.
Yeah, baby.
No, no, you did Tampa, but
He went to Hug Season, Labor Day weekend.
Oh yeah,
Labor Day weekend.
That's right.
He did it.
Okay.
So he had his I see.
Oh, that was the game Mike Ford hit the walk off.
Yep, that's exactly it. And I see him showing up at some of these events this year too. So I think he's getting to that point where he's going to be able to. He's pumped up for baseball, man. Pretty much every sporting event that we see on TV is Yankees. It's like Yankees.
I know he's a monster truck guy. So is he today, a monster truck fan or a baseball fan?
Depends which way the wind's blowing, honestly, and what's on TV. So if you put football on or basketball, like the first thing is Yankees. So he's learning the fact that there's different things and different teams and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're getting there, man. By opening day, he's gonna know every starting player and every position. He's almost there.
All right, that's gonna do it for this episode. Like I said, submit your mailbag questions for next week. We're rapidly approaching spring training. I cannot wait for that. We're ironing out all the details for the after party sponsored by Sailor Jerry. We've got some things going on at the house. We're going to be pumping out content. It's going to be a really fun weekend. I'm going back-to-back weekends because I'm doing that Tampa weekend and then the next weekend Nashville for my buddy's bachelor party. So
nice. I am – you don't even want to know. I'm going Seattle, Washington, back for 3 days, out to San Francisco for a week, back for 5-6 days, down to Tampa.
Okay, you're coming back for 3 days from Seattle to SF? Just go.
It's like four, it might be like 4 days. Because I don't want to sit there for 4 days, twiddling my ass.
Yeah. Okay, then. Let's end it at that.
'Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.